Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Dawn B., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Southern California. Today is Wednesday, October 19th, 2022, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we're on page 36, the first paragraph, "Yet he got drunk again," ending, "and decided to have another glass of milk." Reading and commenting on this one paragraph only. Today's readers are the 12 Steps, Debbie P. Joanne L. will read the 12 Traditions. Reader of the text, Lois P. Penny L. C. will read page 164, and our backup reader is Sherry Z. Reference number for Tuesday, October 18th, 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 19,525. That's 19525. And for this morning, Wednesday, October 19th, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, the reference number is 19,536. That's 19536. Our newcomer greeter this morning will be Christina M., and Shelley E. will do the announcements. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry this message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Debbie P. to read the 12 steps.
Good morning, Dawn. Good morning, everyone on the line. My name is Debbie P. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Indiana. The 12 steps. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening, as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for letting me be of service, and I pass.
Thank you so much, Debbie P. And Joanne L., if you would please read the 12 traditions.
Good morning, everybody. Thanks, Dawn. Thank you for your service, and good morning to everybody on the line, especially the newcomers. Joanne L. from Rhode Island, recovered in Rhode Island. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. Lease problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. In 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you very much. Have a great meeting.
Thank you so much, Joanne L. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature and then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book, and we're on page 36, the first paragraph, Yet He Got Drunk Again, ending, and decided to have another glass of milk. Reading and commenting on this one paragraph only today. I will now ask Lois P. to read and share with us.
Thank you, Dawn. Good morning. Good morning, everyone. This is Lois P., gratefully recovered in New York. Yet he got drunk again. We asked him to tell us exactly how it happened. This is his story. I came to work on Tuesday morning. I remember I felt irritated that I had to be a salesman for a concern I once owned. I had a few words with the boss, but nothing serious. Then I decided to drive into the country and see one of my prospects for a car. On the way, I felt hungry, so I stopped at a roadside place where they have a bar. I had no intention of drinking. I just thought I would get a sandwich. I also had the notion that I might find a customer for a car at this place, which was familiar, for I had been going to it for years. I had eaten there many times during the months I was sober. I sat down at a table and ordered a sandwich and a glass of milk. Still, no thought of drinking. I ordered another sandwich and decided to have another glass of milk. So, this paragraph is so familiar to me. Jim has all of these seemingly innocent, good ideas. They're very practical ideas. He's going to take a ride, possibly find a customer. Then he sees he's hungry, so he's going to stop at some place that's familiar to him. And it's no problem because he's been sober before, even though the place had a bar. He made it through. So all of these are very simple, practical ideas that I can totally relate to so many times in my life. I had ideas that I thought were good ideas that really subconsciously led me, as they led Jim, to self-sabotage. Of course, ending with his decision to have that second sandwich and second glass of milk, by that point in the paragraph, as far as I know, he was gone. So here's the thing, you know, what I wanted to bring our attention to is that he felt irritated that day. Not just irritated, but can you imagine, he used to own the business that he now works for. And he had to talk to a boss that he was the boss, and now he's having to serve another person or be under the guidance or direction of another person when this was his company. And he had lost it. He had messed it up because he had been drinking. So he's minimizing his feelings. And this is what I bring my attention to, that I have minimized. We minimize our feelings. He's hurt. He feels bad about himself. He's angry. He's got resentments there. I mean, just in those two sentences. But this is a person like myself and maybe many people on the line who for years was out of touch with my feelings. I'd feel them, but then I'd just, you know, ignore them because I had to go to work or I had to take care of the kids or I had a meeting or whatever. Feelings that I ignored, that he ignored because he didn't know what to do with them, nor did I know what to do with them. And so when his feelings of anger and resentment came up in him, he pushed them aside, but they weren't aside. They were deep inside of him lurking, like a covert operation, you know, to sabotage him. Even though his will and his idea was to stay sober, underneath there's this whole subculture of feelings that he was not in touch with. It may seem like I'm making a big deal out of this, but truly it is a big deal. Feelings are the things that drove me to eat. On the surface, I was successful. I seemed to be happy. I had all the right things in life, and yet underneath I felt lost, I felt frightened, I felt afraid. And I think in these two sentences where Jim is irritated that he realizes he had lost his business, he wants to hurt himself. At least this is my history. You know, when I felt badly about myself, I wanted to sabotage me, and I would eat over it to numb the feelings and also to actually justify my low self-esteem. And that's what he's doing here. He's setting himself up because he already feels badly about himself. And so these feelings are what we have to focus on within our own self, with our own recovery. They take us away from our gifted life that we are led, really are meant to lead. And I just have such compassion for him in this paragraph because we know what's coming in the next paragraph. We know what's coming in our life when we have not been able to process the hurt and the disappointments. So, have compassion for myself, for others. Have it for yourself and others. And understand that you're not alone. I'm not alone, thank God. I have finally found the path to a closer relationship to God, to higher power. And it comes through this community of beautiful, wonderful, supportive people. And so for Jim, he's not there yet. He's still in the pain, as many of us may still be. But there is hope and there is light. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Lois P., for getting us started. I'm now going to open up the line to take the names of people who would like to share in this paragraph. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experiences too. So who would like to share with us?
Linnea B.
Linnea B.
Mary G.
Robin L.
Elaine G.
Okay, Larry G. Robin L.
Elaine G.
And I have Elaine G.
Deb E.
And Deb E. Let's go ahead and stop there. Linnea B., Larry G., Robin L., Elaine G., and Deb E. Go ahead, Linnea B., and let us know where you're calling from.
Oh, thank you so much. Hi, my name is Linnea. I am a compulsive overeater in Minnesota. I haven't gone through all 12 steps yet, so can't say recovered, but I've been abstinent in the program for 8 weeks, so almost 8 weeks coming up pretty soon. So thank you so much, Lois, for sharing with us today. I could relate to so much of what you said, and I use food to numb my feelings over and over and over and to punish myself. over and over and over to justify my, just over and over and over. And, of course, I use food for all kinds of other things, too. But the relationship that I have had with my feelings and food is intimate. And I think about it like there's my consciousness, and then there's my subconscious, which I can't see at all. And then, and then there's that sort of gray, hazy place where my denial lives. And that's all the, and where my denial lives, and that's what gets me so much trouble. And what I'm learning more and more about this, at least I have more and more clarity. It's not so easy there. And but that, what is so helpful are the steps, the prayer, the meditation, the outreach calls, and sharing, you know, and then hearing what other people's experience, strength, and hope, and what this exact thing. And I mean, I also think about Jim, that he had no ego deflation. He was on, but he was on his way to surrender. You know, and that's a huge thing for me, to really get ego deflation and keep cultivating that surrender. So, thanks so much. I'm so grateful for the meeting. With that.
Thank you, Linnea B. from Minnesota. Larry G., please share with us, followed by Robin L.
Thank you, Dawn, and welcome all the new people on this line. My name is Larry G., and I'm from California. Thank you, Lois, for kicking it off. Well done. There is a very simpler message here in this story of Jim. Jim is just a classic story in the Big Book that I relate to, and the simpler message to me is, here's a guy that is in and out of recovery, relapsing. I think he has even been to a mental institution. What business does he have, a newcomer, going to a bar and grill, right? Of all the places he could go eat, he picks a bar and grill. I mean, this is a classic story of how the mind, the addictive mind, tricks us into a relapse. It sounds like a great idea. Go out to the country, sell a car, go to a bar and grill. I cannot tell you how many times I've done it myself. I've driven by this place. It's a buffet. And I drive by a place and I would tell myself, there, they've got salads there, they've got sushi, they've got really good food. You're hungry. Go in, get a lunch, and get out. And I would be, like Jim, pounding on the table about halfway through, after five or six plates and dessert, walking out of there sick as a dog, wondering one more time, how did this happen? Jim didn't call. He didn't call a sponsor. If he had a sponsor, maybe he didn't have a sponsor. He didn't call someone in the program. He didn't go to a meeting. The brain tricked him. He went to a bar and grill, and I've got to watch that. Even today, even as a recovered members program, I have to be vigilant about my brain tricking me and the thinking that I can have this extra food, that I can go to this restaurant, which I know is a sordid place. I can eat outside my plan of eating. It's constantly trying to trick me. And when I got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, I followed directions. It was like recovery 101. And to me, I take that those same lessons into my OA program. This is recovery 101. Larry, you don't, even today, I don't have any business going to a buffet. Unless there is a wedding that I've been invited to, I will go to that buffet. But I have no business going to a buffet today to have a meal, just as Jim had no business going to a bar and grill to have a meal. He was there for one reason, only one reason only. It was a drink. And I have only one reason to go to a buffet, that's to eat compulsively. And that's, to me, how abnormal my brain is and the messages I get that will set me up to relapse. Love this program. I love all of you on this line. I wish you to have the best day ever. I'm out. Thank you, Dawn.
Thank you so much, Larry G. from California. Robin L., please share with us, followed by Elaine G. star 1. Robin?
Good morning, everyone. My name is Robin L., and I'm from Connecticut. And I can relate to this paragraph, that first line, you know, yet he got drunk again. He was unprepared for what would happen because he had not enhanced his spiritual experience. And I certainly can relate to that, over and over again, I've taken that first bite, had no intentions of binging, but because I was unprepared, I was back in the food. And it generally happened when I felt irritated or any kind of negative emotion or strong emotions, I would pick up that first bite. And it's already been said that, you know, I didn't call somebody. I didn't use the steps. I didn't use the tools. All those things that are booby traps for me. And then, you know, it goes on to say that he had some ideas of how he might be able to get that alcohol, but not thinking that he was drinking. He was just having lunch. And that kind of booby trap happens to me. And only by God's grace I am abstinent today and living free from compulsive overeating. So thanks for letting me share. I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Robin L. from Connecticut. Elaine G., please share with us, followed by Deb E. And just a reminder, if you're just joining us, we're on page 36.
Elaine G. from New York.
Okay, hold on just a second, Elaine. We're on page 36, the first paragraph, yet he got drunk again, and we're reading through that one paragraph, and we're commenting on that one paragraph today. So go ahead and share with us, please, Elaine G.
Yeah, talking about that, about the paragraph, I thought we were going to go into the next one, too, where he actually does it. But anyway, that was in italics, you know, which seemed very important. But anyway, we'll do that tomorrow, I guess. It made me think about what happened to me yesterday. Yesterday, the fruit is no good in my supermarket. I mean, it's like a lot of times you bring it home, it's molded. So I said, let me go to the, you know, the milk farm near my house. I had good intentions, just to get the fruit. But then I did forget that they have too many of these sugary things around, you know? And before you know it, when I went up to the counter, put all my fruit down, you know, they were supposed to get, being all good there, I picked up some sugar. And I brought it out, and I ate it. I says, oh, my God, you know, just like that, you know. And actually, not just like that, I was sort of entertaining while I was standing at the counter, ooh, should I have that or that or that or that or that? You know? Instead of praying, maybe, I ate it. You know? So that this is just like in the next paragraph, the guy talks about what he did, you know? That he added an ounce of whiskey to the milk, you know? But anyway, that's all I have to share. And that's it for me. Okay.
Thank you so much, Elaine G. from New York. And now, Deb E., will you share with us, please? And then I'll be opening up the lines to take more names.
Hi, thanks. Hi, Dawn. This is Deb E., recovered compulsive overeater in Israel. And these are the emotions that got me to eat. These are the, you know, that feeling irritated. That's all it takes to set me off. Because I can take something small that would be small and insignificant to somebody else, and it gets under my skin, or it gets me worked up, it gets my emotions going. And this is, you know, this is the stuff of 10 steps, right? This is why I need to do 10 steps. And this paragraph is so much about ego, the way I see it. And that's like the most common denominator of all my 10 steps, is usually ego, which doesn't so much surprise me anymore, but like it's still, there's part of me that I think is still surprised. It's like I really had no idea that I had the ego that I have. And, you know, this part felt irritated. That's where his emotions are building up. And he had to be a salesman. That's, you know, for a concern I once owned. That's like really hitting the ego hard, right? That takes a lot of humility to have to go back and work and become the employee. He was the employer, or more than the employer, he was the owner, I think. And then a few words and nothing serious. What I hear in that is just suppressing the emotions. Like, that's what I would do. I would suppress my emotions. I would minimize them. Like, oh, nothing serious. Like, there's some awareness of this buildup of emotion. And it's like, oh, no, but that's too much to think about. You know, that's how I was. It was like I couldn't handle any of my emotions. I wasn't even aware of them. But now looking back, I can understand how that, you know, that's the progression, right? There's like something would set me off. Buildup of emotion would happen. And then all of a sudden I find myself eating and I had no idea why. And I've, you know, since being in OA, like I can't eat, even if it's like mealtime, even if I've had moments where like I've sat down to dinner with my whole family and I have to excuse myself and take a few minutes to deal with my emotions because I just can't eat in that state. I know it's not good for me. And I just can't see, I feel like I almost can't physically do it. I'm just looking at the paragraph. I think that's all I wanted to share. But, yeah, it was a really great paragraph today. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Deb E. from Israel. And now I'm going to be opening up the lines to take the names of people who would like to share on this paragraph on page 36, the first paragraph, starting with, "Yet he got drunk again," ending, "and decided to have another glass of milk. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experiences too." So who would like to share with us?
Joanne.
In New York.
I heard a Joanne.
Sherry. Teresa H. from California.
Noel
Kim.
Colorado.
J.
I heard
Mary
a
H. M.
Mitris J.
Noel.
Okay, I have a... let me just tell you what I have. I don't have a lot, so I apologize. I have Joanne, I have Teresa, and I have Sherry. Who else did I miss?
Kim,
Mitris J.
And I had have a Kim.
Noel E.
And a Noel E.
Mitris.
Drew D.
And a Mitris.
Mitris J.
Mitris J. And Donna one more name.
Donna
and,
B.
Okay, I have Joanne, Teresa, Sherry, Kim, Noel, Nitris, and Donna. Okay, so let's, and I apologize to those of you I missed. Please come back tomorrow. We would love to hear from you. So let's start with Joanne, and if you could give me your initial and where you're calling from, and then Teresa will share after that.
Good morning, everybody. This is Joanne L. from Rhode Island, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. And Dawn, once again, thank you for leading the meeting, and thank you for everybody's share so far. When I studied this paragraph, this is what I got out of it. And you know what? Everybody really covered it very well, and especially Lois. She did a fantastic job. He was a liar. And so I want to say, liar, 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 set your pants on fire. Because truly, he knew that if he went into a bar room, what he really was going to do. He actually thought about this. He premeditated it because he thought, oh, I'm going to go in there. He used the excuse that I'm going to sell a car. How many people go into a bar room to sell a car? Not very many people. And so actually in the back of his head, he knew that if he went in there, what he was really going in there for, and it was to drink. And if you look at this whole page that we're on, there's 26 I's. I. This is about the ego and this is about the self. So, yes, he was crushed because he owned his own business, but now he has a boss and he's working for somebody else, and he's irritated. He's mad. And it was said already, you know, that he had a resentment. And so in the back of his head, he goes, oh, you know, it's a beautiful day. I'm going to go into the bar and see if I can sell a car. Well, you know what? The whole time he knew what his intentions were, what he really wanted to do. And sure enough, and he picked up. I'm just going to give you an example. When I used to work, I'm retired right now. When I worked, okay, I would have my meals throughout the day and snacks and everything else. And I would go grocery shopping. Maybe I went grocery shopping the night before or the day before. And then on the way home from work, I'd go, oh, I have to stop at the grocery store. I need, and it was like maybe one little stupid thing. And so in the back of my head, I knew I had already went to the grocery store the day before, spent about $100. I really did not need whatever it is that I thought that I needed. But I knew in the back of my head what I really wanted to do. I wanted to go in there, and I wanted to pick up more stuff for myself, more stuff, more snacks, or who knows, maybe a candy bar, you know, something that I wasn't supposed to eat. So again, you know, we can kid ourselves, and it's the ego that starts, you know, oh, yeah, you know, it's okay, I can do it, I'm going to be fine, you know, if I go into that bar room, everything will be just fine. And then, you know, you realize, no, and then you might just pick up one thing. This is how it all starts again, you know, with the resentments, and then you pick up one little bite. Yes, thank you. You pick up one little bite, and it all starts over and over and over. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you so much, Joanne L. from Rhode Island. Teresa, please share with us, followed by Sherry. Please give us your initial and where you're calling from.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for all the great shares. I have learned so much about myself this morning listening to everyone. And for me, what I gathered from this paragraph, when someone was, a lot of people were sharing about he didn't honor his feelings and he didn't honor himself. And then the resentment started to simmer and they just overflowed because he just got so hot. And what happens for me is I have a sounding board in my sponsor and I need to use that tool more often. Before anything starts to simmer, if I do that, if I use that tool of my sponsor, if I use the tool of picking up the phone and talking to other people, for example, taking a job in the first place for a firm that I once used to own or for a place that I once used to own. If I would call my sponsor and say, hey, I'm thinking about taking this job that I used to own the place, you know, and she would give me suggestions like, do you think that's a good idea? Do you think that that's a spiritual place for you to work? Do you think that you're going to be okay with working at a place that you used to own? You don't think that you're going to have resentment, because resentments are not a good place for alcoholics, for recovering alcoholics, or for recovering food addicts, or compulsive overeaters. It might not be a good place for you. Or picking up the phone and talking to people and realizing, like, yeah, this probably isn't a good job for me. And maybe there's other things, like not needing to increase my faith, my spiritual ground, like taking a job at the last minute because I'm afraid of financial insecurity. That's one of the ninth step promises, is that we lose that fear of people and of economic insecurity. Holding on a little bit longer, increasing my spiritual ground. And then the last part reminded me of, it's funny because last night I started crying during my meditation. I work a little bit too much now that I'm working from home remotely, and I'll work into the night hours and looking at my laptop, I'll have to make myself close it. And when I was doing my meditation, I was thinking of envisioning myself on this pond, this beautiful pond, and I had a fishing pole and my feet were in the water and I wanted to have a sandwich. And I started crying and I was like, I'll never be able to do that. I have celiac disease. I can't eat flour. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Teresa. And Sherry, please share with us, followed by Kim. And please give us your initial and where you're calling from.
Yes, thank you so much for your service. This is Sherry H.M. calling from Washington State. Wow, there's a lot in this paragraph. First of all, it says it's a Tuesday morning. He felt irritated, which is really a code word for the anger or the resentment or something. And it's interesting that he felt that on a Tuesday morning. I imagine it was probably building up over time. And I know I can go there too. And it is about self-pity because, you know, oh, poor me, oh, poor me, poor me, another milkshake or whatever it is. Because, you know, I used to go to sugar, especially for, I said that God was my higher power, but really, it actually, I think, was sugar. That's where I turned, you know, the first thing and pretty much everything. So anyway, it's service is the antidote to self-pity. And I need to learn from this to take the 10th steps immediately, not, you know, sit on it, wait on it, wait till evening, wait till never, you know, sit in my self-pity, because that leads to the excuses. You know, he had the excuse, oh, yeah, he's going to go there to sell a car. Yeah, any excuse will do, right? So anyway, just real quick on the beginning of the next paragraph, it says suddenly he gets this brilliant idea, so-called brilliant idea. And I wrote in here, be careful of the suddenlies in life. You know, check it out with God, check it out with, you know, your sponsor or whatever. So anyway, thank you so much. And I know I have to sanitize my heart all the time. So it's a good reminder and have a great weekend. Yeah.
Thank you, Sherry from Washington. Kim, please share with us now, followed by Noelle, and give me your initial and where you're calling from.
Hi, this is Kim T from Colorado. I'm struggling with my connection, so if I'm not coming in clear, just let me know. Anyway, I just want to say this is why I come to meetings. I mean, there's a million reasons to come to meetings, but I heard this morning exactly what I needed to hear to translate a man in the 1930s, his drinking experience and going to roadside diners to my experience in the 2000s with food. Because I got it. I got how he felt and the resentment and all that. But I wanted to think of a place that mirrored what his experience was. And when someone talked early on, I thought, that's right. The healthy, quote-unquote, grocery stores that I would go to that had salad bars that were endless, or just the standalone salad bars. And it's like everything has an aura of green over it. It's greenwashed, and it's supposed to be healthy for me. But let's face it, in all honesty, regardless of where the restaurant or where that food is on the salad bar, there is a lot of, I'll call it junk, because it's stuff that doesn't belong in my body. It's not on my food plan. It's an alcoholic food for me. And it will lead me way off the beam. And I get excited about that stuff, and I get jazzed about that stuff. And I had not thought about that because I haven't been to one in a while. And then I was thinking about how I used to feel going to those, and I would get so excited. And I could tamper that down and not let you see that. But that's what I was feeling inside, and that's pathetic. You know, and then I go, and we all know the stories of what happens, and fill up our plate a million times and then be beating on the table and on and on. So I am just really grateful to be here this morning. I'm grateful for everyone who shared, and that's it. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Kim T. from Colorado. Noelle, please share with us, followed by Beatrice, and please give me your initial and where you're calling from.
Hi, everyone. It's Noelle E., gratefully recovered here in Louisiana. Thank you so much for everybody who did service on this line, and all the powerful shares. I'm overwhelmed by the generosity of everybody to share their experience. And I have so much to share here. And it kind of is going in two directions. But what God is showing me is that, you know, I am Jim, and I was in sales. And I just had, I mean, this is word for word my experience when I was there. And what I'm feeling called to share is, you know, in recovery, I eventually got to a point where I was just like, I know I can't be back on the road. God, that's what God is showing me. And I tried to look at the end of last year for, you know, other sales jobs, maybe like I sold flooring before, maybe pharmaceuticals or something like that. And I even went on interviews. And in January, God just was like, let go. And so I called my company and I said, I got to make a change. I have to leave. You know, I can't be back on the road. I have to take care of my health. And that same week, my company posted an internal position, a new internal position where someone with my sales experience could share their ESH, for lack of a better term, with people still in sales from the safety of home, and be of service to people who are doing the job that I did for 15 years. And, I mean, and I didn't even seek this job out. God provided it when I finally said, I can't be in this environment, you know, because it was the scene of the crime for me for compulsive overeating. I mean, it was an expense account. I am Jim. I am Bill. I'm all the guys here. No one, you know, I never saw the money. I lied about the money. I'd always order myself, you know, two extra lunches when I ordered lunches for people. Eat them in the car alone, get so much in a food coma, I'd have to take a nap, all that stuff. And yeah, letting go and saying, you know, I know that if I'm anywhere, I'll be with God, and I know I just can't be here anymore. And now this is almost a year later. I did this in January. So it's almost a year later that the miracles just abound. And I still work for the same company, but I'm doing what God, you know, what God guided me to here. And it just is an opportunity to be of service in everywhere. So give everything to God. Every little corner of this life is meant for God. And yeah, that's all I got. Thanks so much for letting me share. I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Noelle E. from Louisiana. Beatrice, please share with us, followed by Donna, and give us your initial and where you're calling from. Or Beatrice.
I'm here. I'm sorry. I was trying to unmute. This is Beatrice J. from Michigan. What stuck out for me, excuse me, from the reading is that this disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful. I don't always know what I'm feeling at the time, or that I can connect my feelings with what's going on. And I'll give a quick example. I was watching a movie last night. It was really no commercials on food, nothing like that. I'm thinking, you know, nothing really going on. And all of a sudden, I wanted to eat. And so I felt very, very hungry. And so I said, yeah, I probably need a snack. So I went up and had a snack. And I kept feeling hungry. You know, it was like I was starving. And finally, I put it together. I'm like, now, I just had a snack. So I'm not hungry. So I text someone, and I said, the food is calling me. And they said, it's the disease talking to you. Don't listen to it. So sometimes this disease just overpowers me. you know, to the point where I'm thinking Jim probably has some feelings going on there, but nothing where, you know, he felt it was bothering him to the degree he wanted to drink. Because this is how powerful the disease can be, cunning, baffling, and powerful. And it's been some things going on with me this week as well, but nothing in particular that was going on at that particular time. So it can build up, but I can't always make that connection there. So I have to believe when the reading yesterday was talking about his spiritual connection, I have to believe in a power greater than myself, who I choose to call God, to help me with this. Because I'm limited. I can only do so much. I can't figure this thing out. I can't figure this disease out. So I have to believe in the power greater than myself, show up, do the best that I can, and my higher power will do for me what I can't do for myself. Thanks for letting me share, and I pass.
Thank you, Mitris J. from Michigan. And now, Donna, please share with us.
Good morning. This is Donna B., spelled D-A-N-A. Recovered compulsive overeater and bulimic, calling from Denver. Thank you so much for everyone's service this morning. More about alcoholism is a chapter that's intended to really drive home the part of the disease that is the obsession of the mind, the part of the disease that made me go back to the food over and over and over again. And it reminds me of a slogan that my mind is a dangerous neighborhood. I should never go in there myself. And what I'm thinking about this morning, based on my experience of recovery and my experience of, spiritual progress, is that, you know, I don't always have to treat myself like a bad, dangerous person that can't be trusted alone. As we work through the steps, and as we go further through the big book, it does start to use language like, oh, you know, my brains are God-given. I can trust my intuition. I can lean into a higher power. So it just feels important to me today.
Time.
Oh, that's time? Okay. We'll just stop there. Thanks.
Thank you so much. And sorry, you just had a should have given you a warning. You had a brief time to share there. So before we needed to end the meeting. So thank you so much, Donna, from Colorado, and to everyone who shared, making this meeting just a beautiful, beautiful experience. We're now going to close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Penny L.C. please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Yes, this is Penny L.C. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.